There we go. Move that out of the way because I will kick it and bump it, and I don't want to do that this morning. I love that song. We're going to have problems with this. It's going to be okay. Hang on. Okay. There we go. I love that song. That song is one of the most beautiful songs, and I think it's a good reminder for us. I'm glad you led that song. The idea that no power of hell, no scheme of man, in the world that we live in today, you may think the world is falling apart and a disastrous place, but the promise is there is no scheme of man, no disaster too great that can ever pluck us from his hand when we are in the power of Christ. That's where we stand. And that is a song. I tell you what, when you hear 2,500 kids sing that song in an auditorium in Lubbock, Texas, that is an amazing song. I may have to change this again. I don't want that to pop the whole time. Okay. Well, this morning we're going to talk about something. Dirty laundry. I don't know about you. I'm telling you, I am pretty typical. We had a policy change, if you want to say that, a policy change at our house about a year ago, and it was drastic, and it was dramatic, and actually it's worked. I'll tell you that the spoiler alert is it worked, but it was a big deal. Now, but before I tell you about the policy itself, let me back up a little bit, tell you the background to the policy. The idea was we were like any family. One of those things that they don't ever tell you about in marriage counseling. You talk about money, you talk about relationships, you talk about parenting, you talk about all these things. But one thing they don't ever tell you about is a big dirty word called laundry, right? Laundry eats your lunch as a family, right? We spent an hour talking about whether you should put the toilet paper over the top or under the bottom. Right? We talked about squeezing toothpaste from the middle or rolling it up, you know what I'm saying? But we never talked about laundry. And really, honestly, it wasn't a big problem for about 10 years. It was okay. And then we started having kids, and laundry became the elephant in the room. I mean, literally, it was the size of an elephant in our room that you couldn't get rid of. And we're like, what are we going to do? 25 years of marriage, let me tell you, laundry has been a bane on our existence for a long, long time. I got 4 kids, and on a Monday morning, they come downstairs, 6 o'clock, let's get ready for school, let's eat some breakfast. It's like 10 till 7 and 7:15, and then they're like, oh, Mom, I don't have any socks. And she's like, it's not my problem. Last night, it would have been my problem. But tonight, this morning, you're going without socks, right? You're not wearing socks. Oh, Mom, I don't have any pants. Oh, Mom, I don't have a shirt. Oh, Mom. And she's like, it's too late. We don't do laundry at 7:15 on Monday morning. We do laundry on Saturday night. That's not my problem. You have to figure out a solution. And they come running to me, Dad, I don't have any pants. And I'm like, don't talk to me. I don't have a shirt. What am I going to do? So we went to Splash Kingdom this past week, about a week ago. Last day, big family get out. We won last time, had some free tickets. Kids went to Splash Kingdom. I told the kids, now look, it's in Canton. It's about an hour and a half, 2 hours away. Before we get back home, we're probably going to stop and eat some supper. So make sure you pack something that you can change into, so that you can, you know, have clothes to eat in. So we went to Splash Kingdom. It was a great time. Had a good time. At the end of the day, we all got in the car, and we're kind of stopping wet. We're all drying off. We parked way over on the north side of the parking lot away from everybody so we could do the in-car changing thing, you know, try not to get caught in the car, changing the car. So the kids are all changing. We're changing all the stuff. And you know, most of us are pretty discreet. We pull the shirt over and off and then the other thing and you kind of get it. But Harry's not. I asked Harry about this story, so he gave me permission to tell the story. But Harry's just like, everything off, everything on, right? So he's sitting in the seat behind me. He gets all of his clothes off. He's back there, everything off, and he starts going, and all of a sudden, Mom, I don't have any underwear. Well, did you pack underwear? oh no, you know, we're like, well, you know what? It's too late now. We're an hour and a half away from home. You're going to go commando, right? You're going to just have to go without. So he had his pants and everything, so he puts his pants on. He's like, I don't know about this. We're like, trust me, it's just going home. We're going to stop. We stopped at Lindale and ate supper and everything, and everything went well. We get back in the car, and we're all getting in there. Everybody buckled up. We're getting ready to go, and Harry goes, hey, don't forget, I don't have any underwear on. I was like, whew, I almost forgot about that, Harry, but I'm glad that you reminded me. You know, if we're in a car accident, you won't have any dirty underwear. I mean, don't have to worry about that. That's for sure. So all the way home, because this is a problem, he's not responsible enough to remember what to pack, what to clean. So last year, policy change at my house, everyone does their own laundry. Everyone. Harry included. Everyone does your own laundry. So we have a little chart. My wife made a little chart, hangs on the wall, has days of the week, has persons next to the days of the week. That's your day to do laundry. If you miss your day, you can't do laundry unless you get permission from the person whose day it is to do your own laundry, and you have to do your own laundry. So now, it works, actually. It was about a 3-hour continuing education process, but we learned how to do laundry. It was brand new to me. That was great stuff. I was taking notes. It's like, okay, soap first, and then I got, my wife didn't like it, because then I'm like, where's the fabric softener? She goes, we don't buy fabric softener. I say, no, we do now, because I'm doing laundry. I want fabric softener. And those pearls, have you seen those new pearl things? Those are awesome. They like smell and stuff. Really cool stuff. Anyway, we all do our own laundry. Even Harry, he does it, and it's been fabulous. It works great. Everyone does their own laundry. And if someone says, I don't have any underwear to go to school today, we're like, it's your own fault. You didn't do laundry. Guess what? And I have seen, one time Laura came down, it was like 12:30 at night. Kids have been in bed for 2 hours, and I hear some rustling in the kitchen. I'm on the sofa reading. I'm like, what is going on? And I come, I'm looking through, I'm like, get my baseball bat or something. Did someone come in the house? I don't know what's happened. And I come around, the light's on in the laundry room. I come around the corner, and she's putting clothes in the washing machine. I was like, what are you doing? I forgot to do laundry. I don't have any dresses tomorrow. I was like, oh, have fun with that. That's yours. So anyway, she set her timer. She got up in the morning, put it all in the dryer. Everything worked out great. It's been wonderful. So we've kind of accomplished that laundry thing. But like my house is probably like your house, dirty laundry is still sometimes a problem, especially in our bedroom. Because laundry, I'm a guy. I know not all guys are the same, but I think I'm probably typical. I come home. I'm like, I don't want to wear pants and a shirt. I want to put on some shorts and a t-shirt or whatever. So I go in the bedroom, take off my shirt, take off my pants. I drop them on the floor. Clothes have this magical ability that they disappear when they hit the floor. I don't know what it is. It's like Harry Potter cloak of invisibility. When they hit the floor, they're gone, right? And like I said, for 10 years, my wife, apparently, I discovered, had this magical ability to convert them from this disappearing place to my closet. And they clean themselves in the process. And I didn't know anything about that when that happened. But now I'm doing it myself. I realize it's not quite as magical as I used to think it was. But I still sometimes don't see it. So like my clothes get dirty and they're all along the floor and they here and there. I made sure there was no underwear in it. So just give you a heads up. My wife said, there's no underwear in that stuff. I said, not my underwear. So anyway, they hit the floor, and then I'm like, okay, I put my pants and my shorts on and my t-shirt, and I'm on the way. And like 2 or 3 days later, they're still there, right? Women, wives, you ever had this? And you're like, is he ever going to pick up the dirty clothes? Because what we do is this, right? I'm like, oh, man, get out of the bed. Oh, that's so nice. And I don't see them anymore. Do you know what I'm talking about? I don't see them. My wife's like, well, after a week, maybe we'll see them. And it's not a big deal because after a week, I can do this. Right? It's like from this to this. But I just don't see it. I don't see what needs to be done. You know what I'm saying? I'm a habitual, my problem is I don't finish things. It needs to be finished, but I don't finish things. I'm bad about this. I love things that you start that never end, like marriage. That's a great thing. I don't have to finish it, right? Raising kids, I can start them, but I never have to finish it because finishing things is difficult sometimes. I get distracted. I'm like, I don't see this stuff. I'm paying attention to something else. But it starts to pile up, and then it starts to smell a little bit, you know. And my daughter's like, what is that stink in your bedroom? And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. It smells fine. Those dirty laundry. Oh, yeah, it's a dirty laundry. I found a couple things on the internet. I thought were kind of cool. Finishing things can sometimes be difficult. This guy, I don't know if you saw this guy. Long run down, right? Notice he didn't quite finish, right? He's calling it a touchdown, but they rule it not because he just drops the ball right at the end. You see that? Like, didn't quite. That's me sometimes. So excited, drop the ball, celebrate. Oh, I didn't quite get there all the way. What's the next one? This is an actual shot from, This is Doug Hopkins, by the way. I was surveying us. It's horrible. This guy's pretty good. He's got the skills. He didn't think out the ending very well, right? He's like, look at me. Oh! Made it all the way down, right? But just, sometimes we're good at what we're doing, but the end just didn't quite make it. Okay, so the next one. What's the next one? Sometimes we're so good. Sometimes we let our anger, right? The ending is not what we expected it to be, right? We get so mad at the guy. Oh, look at me. Let me show you what happens. And then, oh, wow. Sometimes it doesn't quite end the way we want it to. And then I think the last one, this guy, Tony Duncan, I think, he's like, oh, we're going to celebrate the ending. And then sometimes you find yourself the only one who wants to celebrate. And then this one too. We'll still cheer. We got good intentions. We just never connect. It just sometimes happens that way. Maybe you've had the same kind of experience. I don't know if there's things in your life that you just never get done. Housework, construction projects, things you're really good intentions, and you just never happens at the end. Do you know what I'm talking about? You're like, I want to do this, and I just, something always comes up. Even in our spiritual lives, I think this happens a lot. I'm like, I want to do better. I want to pray more. And yet, I keep finding reasons why I'm not. I want to spend more time reading the Bible with my kids. And yet, every night they come home, and I'm like, you know, it's already late. We went somewhere else, and I don't have time. I want to be more involved in church. I want to be more involved in outreach. And yet things of the world come just collapse around me, and I just don't do it. I've had several friends that have retired in the past few months. And I talked to one of them last night. We went over, Dickie and I, playing a little band with a guy, and he retired a couple of months ago. And I said, well, how's retirement? He goes, great. I don't know how I had so much time to work because I'm just overloaded. I have a whole list of things I want to do. Haven't done any of them. I've been retired for 2 months. Haven't done a single thing on my checklist. Is this just me or has this happened to most of us? We just get distracted and we don't get things done. And it becomes a real problem when it is our spiritual life. Because I say I want to do things for God, and things wind up getting in the way. Do you know what I mean? Fortunately, God has an answer for us. And God says, you know what? I have a way for you to get things done for both me and for you. Our text this morning comes from the book of Haggai, which I'm sure most of you have read just recently, right? We all memorized 2 or 3 verses out of Haggai since little kids, right? I don't. It's been a long time since I've ever looked at Haggai. But we're going to look in the book of Haggai. So if you'll turn over with me in your Bible, it's toward the end of the Old Testament. Haggai, there's only 2 chapters there. I'm putting it up here if you want to. There's only a couple chapters there. But they're important. Now let me give you a caveat here. We're talking about believers today, right? Someone who has said, you know what, I want to be a Christian, I'm a believer, and this is my life because I want to do things for God. But if you're not a believer, that's that's okay because there are some things in here that even as a non-believer, someone who's not quite made that decision yet, there are things in here that will apply to your life as well. And if you do become a believer, I encourage you to try to kind of incorporate this thinking as well. So don't check out on me if just because you're like, I'm not quite there today, because there are some principles in here that are good for always. We're going to look at Haggai chapter 1. We're the first couple of verses here. Okay, now I'm going to give you a real brief rundown of history because this is the Old Testament. You kind of need to know what's happened before we get here. On the first day of the sixth month of King Darius's second year, the Lord spoke to this message through the prophet Haggai to Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, to the high priest Joshua, son of Jehozadak. Okay, give me 60 seconds. Okay, here goes the history lesson. Don't check out because this is kind of important. Okay, King David has the kingdom Israel. Things go on, check on a long time. Eventually, we get to this time period, which is about 500 years before Christ. 500 years before Christ. The Assyrian Empire, giant, they control most of the area between Egypt and north, what is now present-day Iraq, right? A king rises up. He takes over the Assyrian Empire, and along with it, he takes over that land in between Egypt and Iraq, which happens to be Israel. The Egyptians hate it. They send a giant army north to fight this new Babylonian king, Nebuchadnezzar. The Israelites join in with that battle. It does not go well for the Pharaoh. The Egyptians lose. Because the Egyptians lose, Israel loses as well. And Nebuchadnezzar says to Jerusalem, you're coming home with me. And he takes Daniel and some other prominent people, lots of prominent people actually, and he moves them back to Babylon. So now we have this time of Babylonian captivity. He left quite a few Israelites actually in Jerusalem, and a few years later he comes back. They kind of revolt a little bit. He comes back a few years later. This is 586 BC, and he says, I'm going to wipe you out completely this time. He destroys the entire city of Jerusalem, and he takes another large group of people back to Babylon, and this becomes what some people call the official Babylonian captivity. It depends on how you clock the dates and where you choose those dates. But about 586 BC, he takes the second wave, and Jerusalem is flat. Okay? Flat. It is destroyed. Time rocks on. A new king arises. This king is from Persia, modern-day Iran, Iraq, modern-day Iran area. He rises up, Nebuchadnezzar dies. A couple kings come after him. He overthrows the Babylonian king at that time, and he comes to power. His name is Cyrus the Great. Now, Cyrus the Great is mentioned in prophecy in the Old Testament. God actually says, I will have my anointed. His name is Cyrus. That was prophesied about 500 years before he actually came to power. But Isaiah wrote down and said, Cyrus the Anointed will do my bidding. And he will rebuild Jerusalem. And we're seeing this prophecy come to life. So Cyrus comes to power, and for whatever reason, it's God working, says, I'm going to send the Jews back to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple. And he creates an edict, and he sends people back. Now, the first time he sends people back, this guy named Zerubbabel is not actually mentioned. There's another guy that's mentioned. But in the next few verses, we see Zerubbabel's name come up. We don't know what happened to the first guy. Did he die along the way or did he not make it? We don't know. But anyway, eventually, who gets back is two people, Zerubbabel and Joshua. Now, this is interesting. Two guys, not one, but two, leading the nation of Israel. Different areas. One of them is kind of the political leader. He's kind of the king or the governor. He's the governor of the area. The other one is the religious leader. He is the high priest. So they kind of have authority in both areas. Interestingly enough, if you go back and trace their lineage, Zerubbabel can trace his lineage all the way back to David. Joshua can trace his lineage all the way back to Aaron. So they have a legitimate claim on the authority. People recognize them as being in charge. And they are sent back to Jerusalem to build. And they start building. They go to the temple. It is in ruins. They build an altar and they start offering sacrifices on the altar. Before they've done anything else, they offer sacrifices on the altar. And it goes well. And the Samaritans, who live just a little ways up from Jerusalem, don't like it. Because the Samaritans think, Jerusalem gets power, they're going to exert power over us, we don't want that. And they start trying to discourage the people from building. Pretty soon, the king changes again. A new king comes into power. Cyrus dies. A new king comes into power. And the Samaritans see an opening. They write a letter off to the new king of Saul in 1 Chronicles and also in the book of Ezra. You can find the story. They write a letter off. They say, King, these people, Jerusalem is such a rebellious town. Don't let them rebuild the temple. They're gonna rebel against you. You won't be able to get taxes. You won't be able to get all kinds of things. You need to stop them. And so the king looks and says, oh, you're right. They have always been rebellious. Stop it. And he sends an edict back to the people in Jerusalem and says, stop building the temple. And they stop building the temple. That goes on for a little while until a new king comes up. This guy's name is Darius. And that's where we find the story of Haggai. Because God finally says, you know what? It's time to build my temple. Let's look at the next verse. This is verse 2. The Lord who rules over all says this through Haggai. These people have said the time for rebuilding the Lord's temple has not yet come. So the Lord spoke to the prophet Haggai and said, is it right for you to live in richly paneled houses while my temple is in ruins? Here then is what the Lord who rules over all says. Think carefully about what you are doing. You have planted much, but harvested little. You've eaten, but are never filled. You drink, but are still thirsty. You put on clothes that are not, but are not warm. You earn wages and end up with holes in your money bags. Specifically, it's talking about coins falling through the holes in the bags of money, which is interesting because Persia, this time, Cyrus the Great, is credited with inventing coins as currency. So it fits the time period. When I read this, I think about us. How many of us eat and are never filled? How many of us drink and are never satisfied? We work and harvest, but we never have enough, right? We have too much, right? That's the world we live in. This time period's not quite the same. This time period, they really tried to harvest, and there's just not enough there. They tried to drink, and there's just not enough there to drink. They tried to eat, and there's not enough to fill their families. The clothes are falling off their bodies. There's just not enough. And God says a little bit later on in the verse, the reason is because you are not building my temple. He says, you live in richly paneled houses. Now, paneling for us may not always have the best connotation. I mean, if I want a house, man, I want brick and I want stucco and I want the stuff that you throw on there and then knock the tops off of them. Not the popcorn things and not the, but paneling was big time for them. Paneling was the best of the best. He says, you live in paneled houses, and yet my temple, which was supposed to have paneling from the cedars of Lebanon, my temple lays in ruins. What was the problem? The people got distracted. The people got busy doing something else. What was the problem? A little bit later on in the verse, it tells us here. Let's go to the next. Right here. The Lord who rules over all things said, oh, that's the next one. We'll skip on down a little bit. Right here. He says, you are taking care of your own house instead of taking care of mine. And the people say, you know what? You're right. They realize that all this time they've been stepping over this dirty laundry, this thing that needs to be taken care of, the temple in ruins, and they've just been blind to it. And they finally say, you know what, God, we are going to do it. Now, they had a pretty good excuse. I got to tell you this. They had a good excuse. The king said not to build. But if the king told us today not to worship God, would we do it? If the king sent an order down that said, do not worship God, would we do it? He told Daniel, don't bow down to your God, bow down to my God, and if you don't bow down to my God, I'm going to kill you. And what did Daniel do? He said, look, I'm going to pray to my God, and I'm going to continue to pray to my God. But in Jerusalem, the people said, you know what, the king, he said not to do it. I think we shouldn't do it. Let's go take care of our own stuff. We get so busy in our lives taking care of our own things that God falls farther and farther and farther beyond our priority. It's easy to give up on God. Elizabeth and I were talking about this week. You know, God is the thing that's easy to give up on. My boss is on my back. My bosses are on my back to get things done. Fortunately, I don't live in that kind of world, but you might. If your boss on your back to get things done, I got to get things done for him. I don't have time to go to church. I got to take care of this. You know, my house needs some work. I don't have time to take care of that. I've got to work on my house. I don't have time to fellowship. I don't have time to spend in prayer because I've got to get money to earn a living. Sound familiar? I mean, we do this. This is, and it's not illogical. It makes perfect sense. I got to take care of me before I can take care of you, right? That's the Oprah Winfrey line. That's not God's line. The people said, we're going to do it. We're going to build your temple. And Haggai says, the word to the people, you know what? I am with you. And then the next part is great. I think we got another verse here. Is the next one down there? So the Lord energized and encouraged, the NSAB says, stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel and Joshua and the whole remnant of the people, and they came and worked on the temple of their God, the Lord who rules over all. Here's a lesson from it for us. We all know that a lot of times our priorities are out of whack. I freely admit my priorities a lot of times are out of whack. And I have to stop and think, you know what? I need to put God where God ought to be, which is first. Here he's talking about building the temple. In our day, we are the temple. We are the temple. Go look up in Matthew. Go look up in 1 Corinthians where Paul is talking about it. We are the temple of the Lord. His dominion extends from us. What do temples do? Temples were built to reveal the deity that dwells inside of them. If you worshiped Athena, you went to the temple of Athena to see the goddess of Athena and to be blessed in her presence so that she could reveal to you what you needed to do to worship her. Zeus was the same way. Name any number of gods. That's what the temples did. God's temple does the same thing. But instead of revealing a stone or a golden god, it reveals a God who is living and working in our lives every day. No, we don't have a building in Jerusalem anymore that we go to offer a sacrifice and see the presence filling up the temple or have a priest walk inside and ask for forgiveness for us for the past year. Rather, we have a living God who has sacrificed his own son that we may be in his presence in a living temple built by his saints together this very day. That is good news. That ought to be motivation to quit stepping over the laundry and rather pick it up, take care of it, and build the temple, which is us. How do we build us? It's not by putting new paneling on the walls. It's by putting more bricks in the building. We ought to be about temple building, kingdom building every single day. Yeah, but you know what? I'm just busy. I got to work. God says, don't be about your own house. Be about, hang on a second on this one. Be about my house. We can't be that football player who kind of halfway stops along the way or, hey, I'm doing my own thing. No, we're about God's house. We are the house of God. So how does that work? Why does it work? This verse is the one that tells us right here. This is also in Haggai, chapter 1, verse 5. Do not fear as you go to work, because I made a promise to your ancestors when they left Egypt that my spirit even now testifies to you. The future splendor of this temple will be greater than the former times. The Lord who rules over all declares that in this place I will give you peace. Now God was talking about the temple in Jerusalem and peace came. You remember what the angels said? In the field to the shepherds, peace and goodwill to all men. Peace arrived in the form of Jesus Christ, making peace between good and evil against sin so that we can have peace with God. That's the peace he's talking about, but the temple eventually becomes us. But there's one prerequisite before it happens. And it's what happened in the verse we read before that says, God stirred up the people. It takes God's will to be fuel for our work. God's will is the fuel for our work. I can say, I'm going to do all this great stuff. Watch me work. Watch me work. Watch me whip. Watch me... I'm not going to do that. Watch me work. No. Watch God work in me. Because God is the only one who can stir up His Spirit within me to accomplish the work. Scriptures say, the anger of man does not accomplish the righteousness of God. I get really angry at times, things going on. But my anger does not accomplish His righteousness. It's His will that accomplishes it. And in Paul in Thessalonians encourages us all, as he encourages the Thessalonians, live in a way worthy of God who calls you to His own kingdom and to His glory. What does that look like in your life? I don't know. I always try to give you an encouragement, give you a challenge, say, hey, this is something I want you to try to do. The problem with this, I don't know what it looks like in your life. I don't know what you're good at. I don't know what God has called you to be good at in building His kingdom. But I know that He calls us to His kingdom. And I know He asks us to put our hands to the plow and to work for Him. So, here's my thing. I want you to spend time in prayer, to let God stir up in you what it is that He is calling you to do in His kingdom. The one thing I do know is that it involves Him and not me. So if you're spending more time getting your life in order as opposed to getting God's life in you, then there's out of balance there. Maybe it's time in prayer. Maybe it's praying more, because you know that's kind of the first step. You know, a lot of things that we do are things we ought to do, to pray before we do anything. When's the last time you prayed? I heard a preacher just recently say, we as Christians love to love prayer. Catch this. We love to love prayer. But do we really love to pray? We love to talk about it. Oh, prayer is the best thing. I'm going to pray for you. I am going to pray for you. Do I ever go back to my house or my office and sit down and actually pray for you? I'll be honest with you. I probably don't more times than I do. And that's a failure of mine. And I don't know if you're the same place, but I struggle with that. So maybe it's prayer that I start. And say, you know what, for the next 7 days, I'm going to pray 10 o'clock every morning, 7 o'clock every morning, 10 o'clock at night, whatever. I'm going to pray every day that God works in my life to help build His temple, to build His kingdom. Put me where you need me to work, God, and open my eyes that I may see the work that needs to be done. Make my hands your hands. Make my thoughts your thoughts. Make the words of my mouth be your words, so we may grow the kingdom together. Imagine if we did that all for a week. How would the world be different? How would our temple here, how would our family here be different? If our priority was not my life, but the life of God's Son and being made known in the community. How would things change? Can you imagine a world like that? Could you imagine a Henderson, Texas like that? Could you imagine a South Maine that was all we did, was not worry about the paneling of my house, but worried about how we're building the kingdom? How would things change if we just saw what is laying in front of us and we went to work and took care of it? instead of making excuses, instead of coming up with reasons why I can't do it, or I'm not smart enough, we actually went to work, and instead of stepping over the laundry, we actually cleaned it up. It's my encouragement to you this morning. If there's anything we can do to help you along that path, we want to do that. If we can equip you along that path, we want to do that. We can pray for you along that path, because sometimes you don't even know what to pray for. I've been there, don't have a clue what to pray for, but you just want someone to pray for you because you're at a crossroads and you don't know which way to go. We can help you with that too. If there's anything that we can do for you, if there's any way that we can help you to put your hands to the task that God has called you to this kingdom, we want to be a part of that along with you. The offering, the invitation is always open. Come up here, grab me or grab one of the elders. We would love to do that with you as we stand and sing.